It's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. In this hour, we're going to explore one of the most basic things about being human, and that's food. Many of our shows have been about food on KSEO and many other stations. Many of our interests deal with food. We think about food every day. But can you imagine that food not be the only way we get sustenance? That there might be other channels that translate into food to our systems? Well, on the line, we have Peter Straubinger, who's a director of a new documentary called In the Beginning, There Was Light. It's been something he spent the last 5 years of his life on. He is an Austrian Broadcasting Corporation journalist. He's worked on many stories around the world, and this was one of particular interest to him, other ways in which people are taking in energy. He had met a meditation teacher who had stopped eating food, but let's ask him to tell that story about how he got interested in this whole new way of looking at food. Peter, are you on the line?
Hello. Hey. I'm so happy to be on the Dr. Future Show.
Yes, thanks for being here. Now, you were first introduced to the idea of this not eating by a meditation teacher, is that right?
Yeah. First, I have to say, you know, I'm now 43, and until my mid-20s, I have not been into spiritual practices, and I had a completely materialistic worldview. But I started to read books of Rupert Sheldrake and Tsege Jung, and then started to do meditation and yoga. And in spring 2000, I met this meditation teacher. Mm-hmm. And from others, I heard that he does not eat. So I asked him, is this true that you don't eat?
And no food at all?
No food at all. And it was by then, in the year 2000, more than a year, that he was just drinking water. That's what he told me. And, you know, it was the first time ever that I heard from a person I know personally that he does not eat. I saw once a documentary about the Swiss national saint, Nicholas of Flüe. Uh-huh. He lived many hundred years ago, and it was said he did not eat and drink for the last 20 years of his life. Wow. But I suppose this is a Catholic myth. And
well, it's a good point, though. I mean, there have been myths throughout the history of our species of beings that didn't eat anymore or had transcended food.
Absolutely, but I didn't know that by then. You know, it was after this meeting with this meditation teacher that I started, first of all personal research, because I was skeptic, because I thought, if this is true, why aren't there dozens of universities doing research on this? Why isn't this topic taken seriously?
Yes, why are millions starving to death?
Exactly, because there are obvious arguments against this phenomenon. But it sounded quite, I didn't see a reason why he should lie to me, and it sounded authentic. So
you had to investigate, huh? You had to look at it.
Exactly. I started, you know, but by then I didn't think about making a movie about this phenomenon.
It was just a curiosity for you to explore.
Exactly. Right? It was just too strange, you know, to take this seriously. Mm-hmm. So I started my own personal research, and then I saw what you just mentioned, that this phenomenon is known all over the world throughout all times. You have it in India, you have it in China, and there are a lot of Christian saints, and you also have it, for example, in the concentration camps during the Nazi regime.
Survival under the most brutal conditions, and yet somehow
exactly.
Survived.
Uh-huh. And you have this phenomenon often in times of hunger.
Wow.
And Viktor Frankl, there's this famous psychologist, you probably know him, he wrote this book.
Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning.
Exactly, Man's mm-hmm. Search for Meaning. And there he writes that under the same circumstances, some people survived, others starved to death. If there was a certain hope or a certain sense in life, spiritual experiences, then people were able to survive this. But, you know...
Yeah, like it was a survival mode of the human system that we'd kick into and need less food and survive under difficult situations.
But of course it's a complete mystery, and of course classical biology and medicine has a very good point explaining us why this doesn't work. And after 5 years of private research, I saw that just by reading books and doing research on the internet, I don't find answers, because I can prove myself anything. I can prove myself black and white. And this was kind of the starting point for doing my own...
The whole documentary on this.
Exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you see examples of people who could do this that weren't just surviving, but were thriving in some way? Were they actually enjoying a normal life, or were they more shut down than... More like
actually,
a computer on safe mode.
Actually, all the people who told me that they can live without eating and some without drinking, there's this yogi who does not eat and drink allegedly for more than 70 years. They all say they would start immediately to eat again if they would feel hunger. Huh. But they just don't want to eat anymore.
So they're actually happy in not eating.
They are absolutely happy. One Qigong teacher, for example, told me for most people, eating is kind of the biggest pleasure in life. But if you know Bigu, that's the Chinese name for breatharianism, for not eating, everybody who knows Bigu knows this is the biggest pleasure, she told me. But of course, most people say, okay, they are eating secretly and it's just all
nonsense. Well, yes, we've had that here in California with Wiley Brooks incident.
Exactly. Right? Wiley Brooks is a famous example for that.
For those who don't know, he was considered a breatharian in California here until somebody caught him eating in the middle of the night.
There's also Hira Ratan Manik, for example, the sun gazer who also was filmed eating in a restaurant. But for example, in the case of Hira Ratan Manik, we also have a study over 410 days in a clinic where he did not eat and was just drinking water, and he only lost 19 kilos, I think.
So let me get this straight. So he spent 414 days in a hospital under surveillance.
410
days. And there, so he was being watched very closely by medical authorities, and he was not cheating, and he lost 42 pounds.
Exactly. And he told me in the interview that in the last 20 years he was eating six times. So
a day.
I thought, okay, even if he ate 20 times or 30 times in these years, you know, it's less than a normal person. It's still amazing.
Could we comment on this after? But we have to go to a commercial break in a couple of seconds here. But hold that thought.
Okay,
we'll be right back with you. Very interesting phenomenon of not eating. Hardly. Okay.
Okay, folks, Dr. Future will be right back. Our guest, Peter Straubinger.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Peter Straubinger about his new documentary, In the Beginning There Was Light, about a whole new way of thinking about food, i.e. not eating. Now, you know, Peter, one of the things that we like to do in America is eat. You know, we're a little maybe overweight as a culture, probably second only to your culture, you know, in Austria and Germany.
You know, it's the same with me. I love to eat, you know, and first of all, I have to say my film is not about making the people not eat. You know, we all know that we often eat too much and we eat the wrong stuff. So this is mainstream wisdom. It doesn't need a new documentary about this.
Yes.
For me, it was interesting if there's just one person in the world where this works, this is really groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of evidence for this and a lot of good indications, like this study with Praladiani, with this yogi who did not eat and drink for more than 70 years.
Yes.
He was studied by the Indian military.
Right.
And he does not eat, he does not drink, and he does not go to the toilet.
Normally,
if you do not drink and you do not urinate, you die after 5 to 6 days.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. That really is. Now, I believe in your documentary, they were studying the fellow from India for his urinary output. And it's true, he wasn't urinating. They said that actually his urine was reabsorbed into the body.
Exactly. They saw this because they had all kinds of studies and they were measuring and they made his blood counts. And it was really well-made study. And in the first week and first 7 days, he was not even allowed to take a bath. So there was not even the possibility that via the skin he was in contact with water. Mm. And this is a really groundbreaking study. And all the doctors I interviewed could not explain how this works. And there are other studies in China, and it was really surprising to me how much evidence for this phenomenon is there. But the next thing I realized is that the human energy balance is not that explained like we normally think.
Okay, now that's what I was going to ask you a question about. Now, it should be fairly straightforward to see how many calories are going in and how much energy is being expended to see whether or not they're related.
Right? Exactly, and that's the myth of the calories. Huh. That's actually a very interesting book, and this idea that per kilo body mass you need that and that amount of calories if you do that and that much work, it's fitting for a lot of persons, but not for all. There are big differences. Some people need more food, some people need less. Obviously, there are
Makes sense, I guess. I think about some friends, they definitely eat more than others.
Absolutely. You have these people who are really fat, and often it's said, they eat secretly. But if they have it in a clinical environment, they see they really do not need a lot of calories. And actually, there's a very interesting study by the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And they were measuring the energy output of the body and measuring the oxygen coming into the body and the carbon dioxide coming out. And so they were comparing these two ways of calorimetry. And normally you think, you fill into the body fuel in form of food, you burn it, and that's the energy. But it came out, this is not true.
There was a discrepancy?
Exactly. The body actually produces more energy than you can account for classically.
How much and more? How much more?
It was in this study of the team of Dr. Paul Webb, and it was up to 23% in completely normal people. These were not breatharians. They were completely normal people, but they found out, and that's in the end of the study, they say the less the calorie intake, the bigger was this amount of unmeasured energy. Hmm. And this unmeasured energy, energy coming out of nowhere, perfectly fits to the idea of the Eastern medical traditions, like the medical Qigong and Ayurveda and so on.
Yeah, there are some Western traditions along those lines too, but yes, more the idea of the life force or a biological energy of some sort.
Exactly. And they say, of course, we take life energy into the body via food and breathing, but there is always a direct chi or direct prana, how they call this life force. Mm. This life force enters also via the skin, for example, directly. And they also say that there are people who are able to attract this direct form of life force more, and there are people who are able to do this less. You can do Qigong practice, for example. You can do energy transmissions. And of course, there is also what we translate with DNA. Of course, in everybody, there is a different capability to do this.
Yes, I've heard of in Qigong, where a Qigong master can do a motion and someone across the room can fall onto the ground, as if they...
There are a lot of really crazy abilities.
I wonder though, but that's Qigong pushing masters. Your energy out there. It's a very yang force, to move your energy and affect something at a distance.
And actually in China, they know this bigu power, they call bigu means without bread. Bigu fu qi, without bread, but only by the power of qi. They know this for thousands of years. And in India, the yogis call this one of the big city. like the supernatural powers you achieve if you do yoga. But the bottom line is, and that's what I want to transport, is that we are all living on light. We are not these machines like we learn in school, like we are just complex machines.
So you don't think these are just random people chosen by nature as experimental beta models, but this is actually an ability that's built into all of us?
Yeah, it's an ability that's... Yeah. But only because you can go, that this doesn't mean that you win the Olympics in a marathon.
But some people have more than us. Like some people are better athletes than others.
Exactly. That's what I mean. But what I wanted to say is that we have to question this materialistic belief system that we are educated in, that nature is purely mechanistic and we are just machines where you put in fuel and then you work. No, that's actually a myth coming back from the 19th century.
Sure.
They found out that the better the studies were conducted, the bigger were the discrepancies and this unmeasured energy. Mm. And it's actually what I experienced when I looked at the history of science, that the better they did the research, the bigger were the mysteries. You know, today we know that... Mm. In the last few hundred years, science only dealt with about 4% of matter and energy in the universe. 96%
dark
is
energy,
black.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. We definitely explore those things. It definitely is interesting. But let me ask you this about this life force. I certainly can see how you can send it, but can you receive? What we're talking about with not eating is that you must be receiving energy from the universe or from others, as well as being able to express it or send it.
You know, absolutely.
So it's so like sympathetic resonance of some sort.
We receive it all the time in different ways. Huh. It's also just normal light and infrared light. We are receiving that all the time. And there's actually at the University of Washington, there is very renowned professor, a bioengineer, Professor Gerald Pollack. I really can recommend his book, The Fourth Phase of Water. He discovered a fourth phase of water besides solid, liquid, and steam. Our body water is this fourth phase of water, and it really can attract a lot of energy. Mm. And it seems this is one explanation for this phenomenon. But we have to say it's a big mystery. We don't know. But I don't give answers in my film. I just ask questions.
And it's interesting that everyone has that ability, or you think so, from your research. So I'd like to talk to you more about, you know, whether or not people could be trained to do this sort of thing, and whether or not there any attempts have been made along those lines. Okay, thank you, Peter. Yep. We'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Peter Straubinger about his new documentary on people who are able to live by eating light. Light and prana, I guess you might say, in the Indian tradition. Now, is this something that we can train to do, Peter? Has there been any success in that department?
Yes, of course. There are, for example, in the medical Qigong, they have certain practices where you can increase this direct Qi intake. We always have to say this is not the classical conception of light. It's divine light or Qi or Prana or Wilhelm Reich, Seed Organ. There are different names for that. But yes, there are possibilities to train this. But actually, I wouldn't recommend it, because, you know, we really have enough food in the world. If you eat healthy, if you eat consciously, it's more than enough. And what all the people told me who do this for many years, they said it wasn't their personal choice. It just happened to them. Huh. It's like a byproduct of a certain state of consciousness.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Is it something that, you know, is, as a byproduct, can be trained, though? Like, for example, is it an emergency? Could we use something like this in conditions of starvation where teach people not to be starving to death? I mean, is that possible?
It can be trained, but the outcome is not for sure. That's, for example, what Patanjali writes in his Yoga Sutras. That's like the Bible for the yogi. Huh. And this city can appear if on the yoga path, but it does not have to appear. And Patanjali also says, You know, you should not care too much about this city. The city can corrupt a yogi like money, fame, whatever.
I see. It's kind of like superpowers in the West.
It's like superpowers, and you should not care too much about them. But yes, there are, for example, also Qigong masters who can transfer this energy, these Bigu transmissions. In Berlin, for example, is a Chinese Bigu master who transfers this energy. I actually experienced that while doing research on that, and it felt like, you know, if you do not feel good in the stomach, you don't want to eat anything. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to any. It was not that I felt I had to vomit, but I just didn't want to eat. And feeling this, it just lasted about 1.5 days, and then I had to go to work again, and then my normal eating habits came back.
I see, you just didn't have the desire, is what you're saying, right? You just didn't feel like eating?
Yeah, you just don't want to eat, and that's what all these people told me. They have to vomit if they have to eat. For example, in the case of Yogi Prahladiani, this yogi who didn't allegedly eat for over 70 years and he did not drink, this ability started at age 7. And I interviewed his brother there. He's also quite old now.
Yeah, I think you have that in the documentary, right? Didn't he have a spiritual experience at the age of 7 where he spoke to three goddesses?
Exactly. And from that day on, he couldn't eat anymore. And of course, his mother, you know, this was a 7-year-old boy, and he said, I cannot eat anymore. Of course, she tried to force-fed him. But whenever he was force-fed, he had to vomit again. He couldn't eat anymore.
Huh. Now, these deities that he saw told him he didn't have to eat?
Exactly.
I think that's
what he told, yes.
Interesting.
So I have a question for you, Peter.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you're a journalist, and the purpose of your doing this research was certainly not because you needed to prove that this phenomenon was possible. What has been the result of this research in terms of your journalistic experience, in terms of the message that you are actually getting out there in the world?
You know, this film shows in 90 minutes in my own development over nearly 20 years from a person who really has a clear mindset how the world works, and it's all materialistic, and mind and soul are a kind of byproduct of our brain and so on, to a person who is really open and sees that nature is a big mystery. And that's kind of the main message that, you know, there is so much more and we really don't understand anything. And that's like the first step that you can search for more.
What's been your biggest controversy with this so far? The authorities that want to not believe in it, or
the so-called skeptics societies? Uh-huh. You have like James Randi in the United States. You have We also have these skeptic societies in Austria and the German-speaking countries. And these people, when my film here in the German-speaking countries really went through the roof. We had in Austria alone like 100,000 ticket admissions. That's for Austria a lot. That's more than most Hollywood movies. For example, in the same day when my film started, Wall Street 2 started, for example, they had 85,000 ticket admissions.
And so you were
George Clooney with The American, 45,000. So this was really big. Most Austrian documentaries had like 5,000.
Well, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah. It was, of course, very positive. And, you know, it really surprised me a lot that so many people were interested in this topic, because I heard, you know, this is like a film that will nobody see, and suddenly all people were interested in it. It was in the Cineplex, in the big cinemas.
Great.
At the same time, there was a lot of controversies, and these people came and say, this is all manipulation. And
they were just faking it, that they weren't...
it's all fake, and I want to make people stop eating. And there were also a lot of attacks, and so...
Wasn't there a woman also doing a 21-day training to get people to stop eating, and some people died that were in the class when there's some controversy.
Exactly.
Around that.
There were actually, I think, about four or five before, and I show that in the film, that people died. So this is no secret in my film. I showed the dangers. After the film came out, a woman in Switzerland died. So these skeptics communities, because they did not have a lot of success in saying, please don't go, don't watch my film, the more they said, don't go into this film, it's dangerous, the more people wanted to see it. So afterwards they say, okay, this film killed a Swiss woman, which of course was complete nonsense. And you can see at my website, if you go at lightdocumentary.com, I have a controversy section, and you can read into this very detailed.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you included that, because, you know, people wonder about those things.
It's really important, but it needs a lot of time to go into arguments and
counter arguments. It does, and it sidetracks you from the real story, which is maybe there's another source of energy for the human body besides molecules.
Exactly. And these skeptics community, actually, they are not skeptic. They have a negative belief system. Yeah. They have a completely materialistic negative belief system, and they don't want to see across the border. Yeah. Actually, classical science, and that's what Brian Josephson told me, physics Nobel Prize laureate, professor for physics in Cambridge, he says our Western mainstream society works like the Catholic Church about 300 years ago. They have these popes and their holy men who decide what's written in the holy scriptures.
Well, at least it has been that way, but with the advent of the internet and instant availability of communications from many points of view.
I thought that, yeah. But what's not in the holy scriptures of science, meaning the peer-reviewed journals, isn't in the world. For example, this study of Prahlad Yani was published on the internet, but it was never published in a renowned Western peer-reviewed journal. So this case does not exist. It's not discussed in the academic world. I have not been aware of this myself, how rigid Western mainstream science works.
Yes, and sure, it is delegated to what's on after UFO Unveiled shows on cable television.
You know, scientific,
or coast to coast, maybe. Yeah.
Scientific truth is made by an elite of scientific clerics, and that's what Brian Josephson said. And if you say something which is against these holy scriptures of science, you get excommunicated.
Yes, well, and it involves anything, almost anything to do with consciousness.
It's true.
Exactly.
I mean, they canceled the TEDx down in Pasadena because they were promoting the points of view of Rupert Sheldrake and Russell
Carr.
Some of the more esoteric scientists.
Consciousness is a hot button.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because mainstream science has the belief system.
Yeah, I can tell you about, that's right. They don't want to accept it because it will unravel the entire system. Anyway, we got to go to a break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
All right, folks, stay tuned with the Dr. Future Show and our guest, Peter Straubinger, and eating or not eating light.
Hi, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about a new documentary from Peter Straubinger about the phenomena of eating prana, another source of energy besides food in our diet. Kind of interesting. Now, has there been any animal studies on this at all, Peter, where animals have survived without eating molecules? Has that been...
No, but there are animal studies with low calorie restriction. And, you know,
calorie restriction, that increases lifetimes.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's mainstream wisdom now.
That's the most accepted version. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of having the animals feed from other sources of energy, the only thing I've heard along those lines is maybe some of Wilhelm Reich's experiences of the 40s and
50s. Yeah, you know, there are, for example, crocodiles, and I think you call them tickles. They can survive like 10 years without food, just sitting on a tree. So nature has a lot of mysteries in this context.
And nature has played a lot with energy absorption.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, in your studies of this, of prana and life force, do you think this is an actual physical energy like electricity or electromagnetics?
You know, there probably you also heard about zero point energy, and
yes.
So this is an open field. It's a big mystery. There are also people who say perhaps in the future we can tap this energy.
Mm-hmm.
We will see.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a sign that we can tap it. That's what I was wondering, if there was any way of increasing our ability to see or play with this energy, if it's something that can be repeatable easily. If so, I think it would get more scientists' attention. You know, if it's not repeatable, it's hard to pay attention to.
You know, it's repeatable, like we said before. It's repeatable in every human. It's more the problem that science does not want to look at these phenomena they cannot explain. And really, the body is a huge mystery. And I came during my research, I came about so many other strange phenomena, like people who nearly do not have a brain and still are very intelligent.
I've heard about that. I think there was an Omni article about that years ago.
I thought this is like a fake article. So,
yeah, people walking around with just brain stems, totally normal.
Exactly. But it fitted very well in my research about consciousness, because that's kind of part of this film. So I looked more deeply into this. And actually, there is this professor in Great Britain who did a study about this in the 80s, and he studied like 500 cases with people who have hardly no brain and are still intelligent. And, you know, this exists, but science just doesn't care.
Oh, is that your next documentary?
There are really so many interesting topics. You have the Institute of Noetic Sciences in California.
Yes, yes.
They do so many interesting things, you know, like precognition and telepathy. And that's what Amit Goswami said to me, that supernatural powers fulfill all criteria of science. The only one they do not fulfill is the criteria of replicability.
Replicability, right. And partially because we're getting into phenomena that maybe are more quantum in nature and not easily replicable.
Exactly. That's what he says. You know, no uranium atom doesn't decay the same way twice.
Got
you know, it's always different. So if we bring quantum physics into this topic, you know, it opens up a whole new perspective.
It does. We do cover that quite regularly on the show, because the mystery there is that how do we have these two universes, the quantum universe and the Newtonian universe, both be true?
Exactly. And, you know, this is just 4% of the universe. And in this 4% of the universe, they already have two theories who completely contradict each other. And there's still 96% of the universe where they don't have any clue at all. So dark matter and dark energy. So if scientists come to me and say, okay, this breatharianism idea is complete nonsense because it does not fit into our theories, then I say, so what? You don't know anything and you didn't solve the most fundamental question of all, what is life? They cannot produce a single cell out of matter, so they know nothing.
This whole area of intelligent life force energy is, I think, well, we'll probably explore that in future shows as well, because there are many scientists in the East and West that have been interested in that, like Wilhelm Reich in the West with the orgone energy back in the
30s. Exactly, but because it didn't fit into the classical theories.
It didn't, yeah, but the classicals are starting to evolve too, and it takes a little longer. There's a lag time.
Exactly. It needs longer. And it's one physicist told me the big achievement of natural science was to simplify the world so strong that we can understand it.
Yeah, but well, that's reductionism. You know, when I was in college, that was the big issue, switching from reductionism to general systems theory. You know,
exactly.
And beginning not to be so just single-pointed focus. It's a good training. You know, it's useful knowledge, but by itself, it's missing how things are interconnected.
Yeah,
I think completing what you were just about to say about how the original purpose of science was to simplify, and yet that seems to have replaced the actual goal, which is to understand, right?
Yeah, but it's a search all the time. Science cannot be a belief system. That's the problem. And that's what Rupert Sheldrake also says, that science became a belief system and they stopped to do scientific work. Because when they hear about something like breatharianism or people who don't have a brain and are still intelligent, they should say, hooray, and let's do research on that. But what happens, they say, first they ignore it, or then they say, okay, this is fraud. And then they say the doctors who did the studies made a conspiracy or whatever. And journalists who do a story about this are manipulating. And, you know, it's really strange.
Well, with such polarizing information, have you found yourself in the middle of any confrontations? Or do you find that you have a group of believers and a group of disbelievers? How do they treat you as a journalist?
Absolutely. It's like in the United States, nobody sees my film, so I'm ignored. But what happened in the German-speaking countries when it became really successful and what was all over the news, I was attacked and they said, this is a pseudo-documentary and I manipulated everything. And they really tried, on Wikipedia, for example, they wrote wrong stuff and I tried to change this, for example, and suddenly I saw that's not possible. I was not aware of this because I thought everybody can write in Wikipedia, but suddenly there was...
There are belief systems everywhere.
Exactly.
and this really is one of the hot buttons.
I think the cutting edge of evolution really is about how does the personal objective authority to understand and believe what you find to be true from an authentic place within yourself meet up with society's agreements about what is true. Since you love to talk about Rupert Sheldrake, I think the case in point of his banned TED Talk is so interesting because he was basically speaking about the fact that the belief in the...
Morphogenetic fields, wasn't it?
He was talking about gravity being a constant. He was talking about gravity being an average of variable measurements instead of an actual constant.
Yeah, yeah.
And because he was talking about his interview of the scientists and how gravity was actually defined, he basically said, okay, it's an average of these measurements that are actually, in fact, not the same. But science chooses to average them and call the average the constant. And so he was basically questioning the method, and it was so unsettling that they canceled the whole TED Talk.
It's incredible.
Yeah, well, that keeps coming back. That's what seems to be the hardest part here, is not the real science of trying to understand, but just to dealing with people that don't have the belief system that can encompass this type of phenomenon.
And for an individual to believe themselves and then be able to have that be good enough for people in a group who have come to a different belief.
Well, thank God I'm not limited by other people's judgments.
And yet, you know, the society is made by the things that we hold in common.
That's
so we
true
need to
too.
Have a civilized discussion about that.
Yeah, no, that's why we...
But it was, for things. Me, it was a very value, as a journalist, it was a very valuable lesson to be in this position and to see how truth is made by others. If it fits in their belief system, anybody can come and say, okay, I have an argument, even if it's complete nonsense. If it fits in the ruling belief system, then people will take this argument.
Yeah. Yeah, you have.
For granted.
Yeah, from Austria, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. I think we learned.
Yeah.
In Austria, so we got to start with what people will accept, and then move into the realm beyond. It gets a little more of interest, I think. So listen, we all have about a minute left. If people want to see their documentary, how can they do that?
Yeah, please visit lightdocumentary.com. Like light and documentary, lightdocumentary.com. We have it online, streaming, download. We have a DVD, and we have a lot of background information there. If you Google about my film or the topic, you will find a lot of distracting information. Please also consult lightdocumentary.com, the controversy section, the background section. I really put in a lot of effort to try to analyze this.
Yeah, it's a beautifully done film, I must say. It was really professionally done. And it's fun to watch. And I appreciate you coming on our show and sharing your perspective on that. As I said, we've opened up a door to this. There's a lot more that comes to mind after you've opened this door.
Thanks a lot. In the beginning, there was light.
In the beginning, there was light. By Peter Straubinger, is that how you say your name?
Peter Arthur Straubinger.
Straubinger, good. Thank you so much, Peter, for being on the show.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
You bet.
Okay, folks, Dr. Future on KSEO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, and Monterey. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday, Future Tuesday.